This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The case against Army General Jeffrey Sinclair went on hold this week. Emails surfaced that led the judge to believe there has been unlawful command influence. So attorneys in the case are trying again to negotiate a plea bargain for Sinclair. Michael Biesecker is a reporter for the Associated Press. He's been covering the General Sinclair case and joins us in the studio. Welcome back, Michael. Good to have you.
Hi, Frank.
We need to recap and tell us what General Sinclair is charged with.
Well, he's charged of having improper relationships with at least four women who are not his wife. But the primary accuser is a woman, a young captain, with whom he had a three-year affair while she served most of that time under his direct command. The affair began in Iraq. There was an intermediary period, and then they got together again in Afghanistan during a tour there. And towards the end of the affair, by her accounting, things had gotten pretty bitter and violent. She claims that he twice ended arguments by forcing her to perform oral sex while she cried. Those allegations are the most serious against General Sinclair. He acknowledges that he had the affair, which adultery is a crime under military law, but he denies that he forced her to do anything, says all the contact was consensual, and says that she's a liar. His side has been buoyed a little bit by revelations that the woman may have perjured herself under oath during a pretrial hearing in January, where she apparently lied about the circumstances of her finding an old cell phone that contained messages from the general.
So what he said he is guilty of is what we might consider code of conduct violations that may not rise to the level of criminal in our courts, in a civilian court. So what's at stake here are these civilian, what would be civilian charges of rape and sexual abuse. Then there was a trial, because there's always a question of whether or not you can work out a deal. And prosecutors said, no, we need to go forward with a trial. That seemed pretty normal until the judge got a hold of some of the emails. Tell us what happened this week.
Well, prior to that, in a pretty unusual twist, the lead prosecutor that had been handling the case for 2 years was removed just a couple weeks before the trial. Typically, that's going to lead to some sort of delay when you lose the lead prosecutor right before the trial starts. But the military, the Army, said they wanted to forge ahead with a new prosecutor who was assigned. And what we learned last week was the backstory on what happened, why that prosecutor was replaced. In December, General Sinclair had submitted a plea offer where he said he would plead guilty to some of the lesser charges against him. Improper conduct, improper relationships, conduct unbecoming a gentleman. But he was adamant he would refuse to plead guilty to any sexual assault charges or anything that would require him to register as a sex offender, which that conviction would. And the prosecutor, concerned about whether or not his primary witness, the accuser, may have lied under oath or may have lied to him, which he seemed most concerned about, was in favor of that deal. And unlike in a civilian case where a district attorney, a full-time lawyer, someone who went to law school is going to make the decision about whether or not to proceed with a criminal case, in the military code of justice, it calls for the commanding officer, in this case, Lieutenant General James Alexander at Fort Bragg, the commander of the base, made the decision to turn down that plea offer. Now, why he did that is in debate. He says he did it solely because the accuser in the case wanted her day in court, and that's why he overruled the prosecutors who wanted to make a deal. Emails surfaced over the weekend that were introduced in evidence in court that there was a letter from the accuser's attorney which tried to tie this case to the larger political implications of the debate about combating sexual assault in the Army. And basically, the argument was made that if you dismiss this case against General Sinclair, women across the Army will be less likely to come forward and report sexual assaults because they won't think anything will be done, especially if it's a high-ranking officer. And the General Anderson, read that letter. He testified he didn't read it closely, but his emails show otherwise. And he said, I read that letter and I made my decision in an email. And so it's clear that he, to the judge, was concerned that he was weighing the political implications of dismissing some of the sexual assault charges as opposed to what the military code of justice calls for, which is just the evidence before him, the evidence of General Sinclair's guilt or innocence.
So what did the judge do?
Well, the judge hit the reset button in a pretty unusual move. The accuser testified on Friday. she was to be cross-examined by the defense on Monday, but the prosecution handed these emails over to the defense over the weekend. They made a motion. They had alleged in three separate motions over the last year that unlawful command influence, basically that meddling in the case from outside the chain of command, had had an impact. And each time Judge Pohl, the judge overseeing the case, turned them down. But they said, in light of these new emails, you have to reconsider. And he did. He found the emails persuasive. And he sent the jury home, a jury of 5 2-star generals, because in the military, you can only be judged by your superior officers. And General Sinclair is a 1-star general. So they have 5 2-star generals brought in from all over the world. And he sent them back. He said, we're going to have to delay this case and give the defense another opportunity to come up with a pretrial plea agreement with the prosecution. So that's the place that we're at now. The trial's delayed indefinitely while they try to hammer out a new deal.
So that's going on behind the scenes. Trial is delayed. Meanwhile, this did happen in the backdrop of an ongoing debate across the nation and most particularly in Washington about what to do about sexual assault. And this brings us to the Military Justice Act. So tell us about that and how that played a role. As you said, there was this real political consideration about how it might look if we took a plea deal rather than go forward with a full-blown trial.
Well, the concern of members of Congress and the public and members of the military in the past has been that there have been cases where there was strong evidence that rape or sexual assault occurred, only to have a commanding officer, not an attorney, maybe overturn the verdict of a jury, give someone a lesser punishment, or choose not to proceed to trial, just basically to allow someone to maybe to retire at one rank below what they had at that time. And so based on those past cases, members of Congress, I think Kristen Gillibrand, Senator Kristen Gillibrand from New York, has been spearheading an effort basically to remove prosecutorial decisions from the chain of command, basically where it's not the commanding officer making that decision about whether to go forward or not, or whether to accept a plea deal or not, but it would be maybe some sort of special prosecutor, a trained attorney. And that vote in the Senate last week, the Senate, the only body, legislative body in the world I can think of where you get more votes than the other side and lose, it was a 55-45 vote. But Gillibrand,
in favor.
In favor, but she lost. She failed to get the 60 needed for cloture under Senate rules after the vigorous opposition of the military brass. The Pentagon was up against the bill. So they came back this week with a different bill on Monday that would allow essentially the good soldier defense that's allowed currently, that someone was a good soldier in the Army and therefore the charges should be dismissed because of meritorious service in a combat zone or something like that. That was invalidated in an overwhelming vote Monday. I think it was 97-0.
Well, and we should sort of highlight that is, in fact, a consideration in the military code of justice, that you can look at your record as a soldier and that can weigh into the trial overall, whatever the charge is.
General Sinclair, for example, has done 5 overseas combat tours. He's received several Bronze Stars. By all accounts, a great wartime leader. And certainly when he was negotiating his deal with the prosecutors, before it was overruled by the commanding general, one of the measures that they were looking at was the fact that, you know, this guy is a war hero. He should be allowed to retire with some semblance of honor, even if it's at reduced rank.
All right. So that now is, at least in the Senate bill, that passed unanimously. Mm-hmm. 2014, the United States Senate passed a bill unanimously, 97-0. That measure did pass, and it goes to the House. And what's the likelihood of success there?
You know, I don't cover Congress, but if the military is against it, which I don't know that they are on the record against that particular bill since it's so new, seemed to pass very quickly.
And with a lot of votes, yeah.
You know, it did get a lot of Republican votes in the Senate, but presumably they would have a little bit tougher row to hoe in the House, which is more overwhelmingly conservative.
Meanwhile, the Gillibrand legislation that would have taken the chain of command out of the process did fail, so that remains in this legislation.
The senator says she plans to bring that back in a few months, and what I heard her say in an interview was that a lot of the senators who voted against her said, look, we want to wait and see what happens in the next few months, and if it doesn't get better, we're going to be with you next time. And some experts I spoke with yesterday said the Sinclair case depending on how it turns out, the fact that it has been such a mess may be Exhibit A when that argument comes back around again in a few months.
It's going to be Exhibit A in a lot of circles, including military law court. This is a unique case, to say the least, isn't it?
I talked yesterday to a former he was the top lawyer in the Army before his retirement at the Pentagon. He said he had never seen anything like this in a 30, 40-year legal career.
I mean, you have prosecutors. And again, if you were concerned about sexual misconduct in the military, the idea that the commanding officer said, let's go forward with a trial, should be encouraging to you if you're worried about it. But because it was perhaps done to undermine more robust legislation, it puts a reverse on everything. So there's a reverse spin on so much in this case.
General Sinclair's lawyers would argue that the pendulum in his case has swung back too far the other way, that essentially because he is such a high-profile defendant that the Pentagon fears the blowback from Congress that might come if that case did not go to trial, that they would be hauled in front of a committee to explain to Senator Gillibrand why.
So now there's a deal in the works. Any idea when we might hear what they've worked out?
Well, first they have to find a new general to say yes or no to any plea deal that they're able to work out. Under the Judge Pohl's ruling, General Anderson was conflicted by politics, so they have to go outside the chain of command at Fort Bragg and find someone new.
We will stay tuned. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Biesecker, a reporter for the Associated Press. Just ahead, school board response to teacher tenure and Governor McCrory's reconsideration. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.